Good morning, everyone. I'm very excited to be here, and particularly because I must say I was almost raised on the subject of the authors at Paris Savoy, and they were working about the convention, and of course I also use it quite extensively. Publication of Mr. Monbray. So this is nice opportunity to see authors as real and leading creatures. Why it is just me coming here? Of course, there might be different, less and more polite explanations, but if we should look for some justification of having just a neutral among the 46 judges of the European Court. I would say, number one, I am in the fourth section of the court, presided by Sir Nicolas Plaza, so I have more or less a constant contact with UK legal culture, if you take a look at these two diagrams, which have been distributed some while ago, you can see that the breakdown of the case pending before the Human Rights Court is developing in a quite interesting way. If you take the earlier diagram, I mean the 1st of March 2005, you can find the total number of tenants was 7,400, and Poland accounted for 13.8% of the spending cases. If you take a look at the second diagram, November 2006, well, more cases, 89,060 pending cases. Poland accounting for 6.6 for pending cases, which of course shows a quite important decrease, which was due to some pilot projects developed just within the COVID divisions and concerning Polish cases. So that's why if we are going to talk about, let's say, technical problems of functioning of the court and the future possibilities of the court to cope with the increasing number of applications. This Polish experience, or the experience with Polish cases, might be useful, at least might be also instructive for other countries. And to start with a brief reminder of the situation, you can see already from those two diagrams that the situation is rather complicated. There are very many applications pending in Strasbourg and arriving to Strasbourg. There is a constant growth of the number of applications. And of course, it's very clear that the court is unable to deal with all incoming applications in a timely manner. The court received 401 applications in 1981. It was in the old system without post-COVID discussions. This number reached 4,750. In 1997, already when the two countries began to show. In 2005, 45,500 new applications arrived to the court. And now, as I mentioned, there is almost 90,000 applications pending. It's quite possible that in some years we might have more than 1,000 applications coming or arriving every year to Strasbourg. This, of course, produced a considerable backlog. The court particularly when it was still trying to use traditional approaches, simply was unable to deal with all incoming applications, and hence it is not unusual that even in important cases, RPG-2, RPG-3 cases, those cases are 6-7 years old because before they were decided in Strasbourg. Well, of course, there are some countries producing more applications than others. You can see also from this diagram that there are 4 or 5 countries which generate more than 50% of all applications. And you may also see quite a dramatic increase of the Russian cases. 14.1% last year, over 21% this year. But we also have to have in mind the number of the population out of this 800 million population of the Council of Europe, which maybe is even more now. Russia accounts for a relatively significant portion. So this 21% of Russia is not so disproportionate different as far as the number of the population is concerned. But anyway, that happens. And the future is not very promising because on one hand, there is now the ratification of the 12th protocol, pending, maybe protocol which would introduce something like equal protection clause in a full extent to the convention. And secondly, there is a constant discussion, which also can bring some concrete results, about the accession of the European Union, the European communities, to the convention system. If both prospects have been realized, fulfilled, then of course the number of cases would increase accordingly. Of course, there are different types of applications. Probably most of those cases which are finally lent to the the judgment stage are cases concerning Article 6 of the conventions, namely length of procedure cases. So the vast majority of those cases which are not rejected on the spot still are not cases that say of dramatic importance, but they make the quantity of cases, and this makes it more difficult to have other important cases, Article 2 cases, Article 3 cases, decided. So once more, the result is that we have a very considerable backlog in our operations. And the question is what to do. Well, of course, the general answer is very clear. It's necessary to find some reorientation of the concept work. At least for persons like me, coming from a big producer countries, it is very clear that it is no longer possible to deal with each and every application, let's say, in a traditional manner, in a manner it was typical from 1970s or 1980s. If we try to do it, of course it's impossible, it would take years, and it would sooner practically eliminate the court's ability to deal timely with the important cases, and we would have this classic phenomenon of justice delay, which is practically no justice as far as important cases are concerned. This is probably on one hand necessary to invent more effective procedures. It may ease the backlog. And as you can see on this example of Polish statistics, this is quite possible. But at the same time, it's quite clear that we have to go beyond mere technical adjustments or improvements. And this is probably necessary to accept the system of selection. Selection of important cases, which will be dealt with in a timely and prompt manner, But of course, it would mean that not important cases, even if there is a violation of the convention, would not be dealt at all or would be dealt in a very, very delayed manner. So, of course, as far as individual violations of a drastic nature, once more concerning right to life, Article 2, Article 1, degrading treatment, torture, Article 3, and similar, then the court still has to deal with each and every application. But this is probably all the court can do as far as individual cases are concerned. At the same time, more and more, the court probably should deal with general problems to cure the problem, the structure or the source of violations, and not simply to react to individual symptoms of these sources, which might mean a gradual transformation of the Strasbourg court into a kind of European constitutional court, dealing not only individual cases, and maybe not even, first of all, with individual cases, but also dealing with the problems. This situation and this realization formulated more or less the background of recent changes, which now are about to culminate in the so-called 14th Protocol to the Convention. Practically since 1999, at least since 2001, so almost immediately after the previous reform of the court entered into life, this was, as you well know, the 11th protocol to the convention, it was found that something more should be done, some, at first less formal, later more formalized, working groups have been established within the Council of Europe. Finally, the Steering Committee for Human Rights was entrusted with preparation of a report. What should be changed, amended into the text of the Convention? This Steering Committee, so-called CDDH, submitted its report in April 2003, and its final report in 2004, in April, in May 2004, the Committee of Ministers adopted or submitted to ratification by the Member States the 14th Protocol to the Convention. As of today, 45 countries, member countries, ratified the Convention. This is only Russia, which is still in the process of ratification, whereas political declarations are promising, so we may hope, even if we still cannot be sure, that the 14th Protocol will enter into life very, very, very soon. But at the same time, it has been realized, practically from the very beginning, that the 14th Protocol will not be able to solve all the problems, or even will not be able to address the most difficult problems. The 14th Protocol is a political compromise, and it does not bring any radical transformation to the system. So this is, in my opinion, but of course this is a very private opinion from the position of the court, this is rather an interim measure which could somehow ease the situation over the next years, but it will not bring any let's say, decisive step in dealing with all these problems I've already mentioned. Therefore, the court must work on its own to develop new practices and procedures within and beyond the 14th Protocol. And at the same time, this is quite clear that it is already now necessary to work on the text of the 15th Protocol and 16th Protocol. Why two protocols? 15th Protocol, which might be devoted to the entry of the European Union or the European Community into the convention system, it would require some amendments to the convention, maybe not very substantive amendments, but still, but this is a separate problem. And 16 protocol for the unclear future proposing or introducing more general changes into the convention. So this can be already realized that it is necessary within the court. There is a so-called committee of working methods, which has been active for 2 years, preparing some proposals once more to, as far as implementation of the 14th protocol, and as far as questions what next are concerned. Outside the court, the so-called group of white persons have been constituted by the Council of Europe under the presidency of the former president of the European Court of Justice, Mr. Iglesias, with the participation of, for example, Lord Wolf from your country and the former president of the German Constitutional Court, Mr. Lucas. And these white persons are working on some, let's say, more general proposals. In the meantime, Lord Wolf was entrusted with preparation of his own report or system of proposals, and this report has already been submitted with quite interesting set of resolutions. So where are we now? Assuming the 14th protocol will be ratified soon, there will be several new procedures and structures. At the same time, already several new procedures and structures are in place, somehow invented by the court, still without the new framework of the 14th protocol. Those changes might be discussed in 4 or 5 different perspectives. The first is what about the members to the convention. Here the only important change, which has been rather promised than fulfilled by the 14th protocol, is the accession of the European Union, Article 59, Section 2 of the new text of the convention, provides for a possibility for the European Union to join the convention system, so there will be no longer individual states, but also the European Union as a collective of supranational members. As you probably know, a similar clause has been put into one of the articles of the draft of the European Constitution. But the only problem is that the European Constitution is probably in a very promising shape. But anyway, such possibility exists even if this is still rather distant perspective, but it has been noticed by the Portuguese protocol. As far as the court is concerned, well, the judges. 46 judges as of now, this is also a relatively large group. The most important change introduced by the Portuguese protocol is your Article 23, a single nine term of office. Until now, judges are elected for 6 years with the possibility of re-election. This new system is, in my opinion, a very good system because the non-reviewability of judges, of course, enhances the independence. I must say, for me, the system in which the judge had a perspective of being re-submitted or not re-submitted by his or her own government to the Council of Europe for a new nomination was a system that would be completely, at least from my perspective, was completely uncomfortable to the judicial independence. And we have situations in Strasbourg, not only from East European countries, in which the governments did not propose the sitting judges simply because they did not like either the judge or his position taken in different cases. I must say, if we have a system like that on a domestic level, it's quite possible that we will decide that it's contrary to Article 6 of the Convention. The other The other positive result of this new system is the concentration of personal changes. There will be no longer a dramatic change of 20 judges or so. Changes will come gradually, just from one judge to another. Of course, this will not be immediate effect, but this is also much better for the continuation and of the court action. Another important change concerning the judges is the new approach in Strasbourg to the meaning of this provision of the convention, which says each government has to submit 3 candidates, and then one of these candidates will be chosen as a judge. There has been a period in the history of the convention in which there was something like a custom always to accept the number one on the domestic list, which is more or less the same as with the ECJ system. Since some years, however, the Strasbourg bodies, Parliamentary Assembly and the Committee of Ministers, became more active in requiring, number one, more transparency in domestic nomination proceedings. This should be no longer reserved for some discretionary decisions of the governments. There should be some kind of procedure, more or less transparent procedure, on the domestic level in establishing the list of three. Then those candidates should be qualified, all three of them, which of course is not a very far-reaching requirement, but still. And those qualifications should also be assessed on the Strasbourg level. There is a subcommittee of the within the Parliamentary Assembly, which by the way has been chaired for a long time by your MP, Mr. McNamara. And this subcommittee holds hearings with all candidates, and there have also been situations in which the subcommittee proposed to withdraw the list of three, saying, well, there's one or two very private candidates, but the said one is just a token candidate. She or he has no qualifications at all, so it is not a true list of three candidates. And this is also, I think, an important change. The result is also that there have been several examples of situations in which not number one, but number two, but number three from the list that might be elected by the parliamentary assembly. So discretionary powers of national governments have been quite considerably reduced. And the third development in this area is the problem of gender imbalance of the list. Now it is the requirement of the Council of It's a suggestion, but a very strong suggestion of the Council of Europe to have those lists gender balanced. It means at least one female candidate between among three candidates. And also there have been two examples recently of rejection of a list which was 100% male list. However, the list from Latvia, which was 100% female, it's not to be rejected, which of course has a tendency of discrimination. But anyway, it is also a quite interesting development for the future. So much about judges. Now, the judges. There have been two more radical suggestions, however not accepted in that forum. The one to return to the traditional dual structure, the court and the commission, again, the existing court plus something back from the court as such with the mission to deal with those non-meritorious applications. Reject for a moment, but who knows for the future. And another suggestion which has not been followed as yet, this was a suggestion developed also by the Lord Woods report, was to establish regional courts or regional sections of the court simply to delegate some powers from Strasbourg to the local or regional creations. This also has been regarded as being a little bit premature, taking into account that in those countries which still account for the largest number of applications, that means those countries which realistically should be the host of such regional creations, maybe some elements of legal cultures are still different from elements typical for other countries of the Council of Europe. So what is left is the court. As such, there will be probably no general structural changes. However, within the court, the recent change was the establishment of the fifth section of the court. The court traditionally has been divided into four sections. Now, with the increasing number of judges, there are five sections, each one having nine judges. As you know, the system is that the judgments are taken, judgments of merits are taken by the chairman of seven judges, but chairman is practically within the sections, so it's nine judges sitting, two judges being substitutes, seven judges formulating the chamber for a particular case. Well, this is a very good idea, because of course it allows the court to deal with a large number of cases. But at the same time, the existence of five members poses quite a visible problem of coordination. Different chambers have different identities. Some are more activistic, some are less activistic. So the problem of the coordination or uniformization of the case law is now one of the problems which is quite useful in the court practice. Now, under the 14th protocol, there is also a possibility to establish a chamber of five judges, which of course would allow to increase the number of adjudicating bodies. At the request of the plenary court, the committee of ministers, by unanimous decision for a fixed period can allow five judges chambers. I must say I'm not sure whether this is the most promising idea, because at one hand it would produce even more problems with coordination and with different identities. On the other hand, the real tragic journey is not before the chambers. The real tragic journey is before within the range of the system selecting cases for as far as its admissibility is concerned. So this is not the problem with it is not a problem as in which chambers, but this is at least one of the possibilities. Another structural change which might be introduced or which will be introduced after the 14th Amendment is the new power of the Commons. But as you know, the Strasbourg system is that the court can act, at least until now, the court acts either as three judges committee, and this three judges committee has the power to decide an application inadmissible. We have to have in mind practically 90 to 95% of all applications inadmissible on the level of the court. This is quite important. Part of the court structure, and then the next stage is chamber or grand chamber, etc. So, as far as the committees are concerned, the new idea of the 14th protocol is that now the committee of two judges will have no only the hitherto existing power to declare inadmissibility of an application, but also will have a power to decide admissibility and render a judgment on the merits, at least in situations in which, as it says the new convention, the underlying question is already the subject of a well-established case. This, of course, might be a very interesting solution, a very interesting development. And we have to have in mind that the vast majority of, let's say, judgment cases in the court are effective cases. A very simple case. But at the same time, again, it will not produce a revolution. Because as it is now, if we have, for example, Polish lengths of procedure cases, which are submitted to the section decided by the chamber of seven judges. But it takes 5 minutes to decide such a case. It's so simple, it's so obvious, and there's no practical possibility even to have a longer discussion. That whether it's decided by a three-judge committee or by the section, well, it may improve, but it will not revolutionize the whole procedure. Then, the other cultural change is the introduction of the single judge at the institution of rapporteurs. The idea is that now the fourth possibility, so next to the grand chamber, chambers and committee, will be single judge, decided as a single judge, or taking final decisions as to the inadmissibility of application. So practically what has been done, or what is being done now on the committee level, should be delegated to single judges. So practically the single judge will replace what now the three judges committees are doing. This is more or less a confirmation of the existing practice, because of course we also can imagine that those clearly inadmissible cases, they usually do not provoke too much discussion within committees. What is the problem? Is that under new Article 26.3, a national judge cannot sit as a single judge in cases coming from his or her country. This, of course, has some advantages, but this allows to avoid conspiracy between the national judge and his or her government. This may ensure more impartiality. But the problem is that only the national judge is familiar with the legal system of the country, not even mentioning the language problem. Of course, it's no problem to find a person who can deal with UK cases because they are in English, but there are at least 5 or 6 countries in which no one except the national judge is able to read the file. So what does it mean practically? It means that those cases will be decided on the registry level, and then the single judge would rather have some general supervision, just trying to find maybe something is wrong. But this would delegate those powers of decision much lower than to the level of a single judge. Well, to remedy this situation, the idea is to establish within the registry the new institution of so-called rapporteurs. It means a highly specialized lawyers whose responsibility would be just to deal with these individual, clearly inadmissible cases and to present those cases to the single judge. What we still do not know is who those rapporteurs should be. There are two ideas as of now. The one idea is that they should be persons with already considered domestic experience, for example, judges, domestic judges delegated to Strasbourg for a certain period of time to deal with such cases, which of course would assure competence. But the problem was how many such judges would be interested to go to Strasbourg for 2 or 3 years or something. The other idea is that those rapporteurs should be experienced registry lawyers, which would of course assume more uniformity in their actions, more independence from the national government, but it would not change too much, because this is more or less the system we have now, that those clearly inadmissible cases are prepared by younger registry lawyers, instead more senior registry lawyers, and then accepted or not accepted by the three judges committee. So, once more, this might be interesting, but it will not bring about a revolution. As far as procedures are concerned, so of course, single judge and three judges committee have already mentioned these new possibilities. There is a new Article 35.3b. Dealing with or providing for inadmissibility of unmeritorious applications, namely, even if there is a possibility that there has been a violation of the Convention, nevertheless, the application may be decided, may be found inapplicable or inadmissible If the applicant has not suffered any significant disadvantage, if the case has been duly considered by a domestic tribunal, unless respect for human rights requires examination of the case. So, this is a new formula, which, as you can see from even the scratches of the text I quoted, is clearly a product of a political compromise. Some countries wanted it more clearly written, some countries didn't like it. At all, this is like quite often in parliamentary legislation, a compromise which is probably not the cleanest compromise from the legal point of view. Will it bring a change? I don't know. The court is, of course, now in the process of discussion. What does it mean, those significant disadvantage? What does it mean, the case that you consider? What does it mean, unless respect for human rights requires examination of the case? So this is very difficult to tell what would be the final reading of this text in the case law of the court, by one can assume that, for example, if there is a very minor monetary impact of the case, then probably it might be interpreted as no significant disadvantage case. On the other hand, if the case is an Article 2 or Article 3 case, then probably almost in each occasion respect for human rights will demand examination. But this is very difficult to tell how would it work. It is also, it will also be delayed in time. Article 20 of the Portuguese Protocol provides that during the first 2 years, only chamber or grand chamber will be allowed to dismiss an application under this EU, under this new criteria. So, practically, it would limit the application of this provision quite considerably. Resulted from Lord Wolff's report. Lord Wolff's proposal was to redefine the very notion of application. As you know, as of now, application can be submitted to practically anyone. There's no, almost no procedural requirements, which makes it quite different from regular situations with regular Supreme or Constitutional Courts, which usually has quite extensive procedural requirements. Lord Wolff's proposal was also to formalize at least a little bit the procedure of applications being brought before the Strasbourg Court, which might be very, very interesting. Another two proposals, which also are under discussion, is to introduce an obligatory legal representation for applicants, which is again the case which most constitutional or Supreme Courts on the domestic level, or even to introduce a team, which of course would be reimbursable if the case is declared admissible, but still might somehow limit the number of applications. However, what is probably the most interesting part of the story, as far as procedures are concerned, is the idea of a so-called systemic violation of IPR. As I already mentioned, with the increase of the number of cases, it's more and more visible that there are some general problems which cannot be regarded as simply resulting from individual errors or arbitrary actions of individual persons, but resulting from a general legislative situation, administrative practices, or general shortcomings in the state. And there are two ways to address such situations: the Portuguese Protocol way and the Court's way. The Portuguese Protocol way is the new Article 46 of the Convention. As you know, the general provision of Article 46 as of now is this is the Committee of Ministers which supervises the execution of judgments of the Court. Now, the new sections 3 and 4 of this article are going to introduce something like two-way traffic between the court and the committee of ministers. So as before, this will be a duty and the power of the committee of ministers to supervise execution of the judgment, not the cause as such. But if there is a problem with interpretation of the judgment, the committee of ministers now will be able to refer the matter to the court for a ruling on interpretation. And what is even, what might be even better problem, if a member state refuses to provide clarifying the judgment, then the committee of ministers, after having sent notice, the unsuccessful notice to the member state, by 2/3 majority, they refer to the court the question whether a member state has failed to fulfill its obligations under Article 46. And then the court, because in grand chamber composition, will decide whether there has been a violation of Article 46. If so, it will refer the case back to the Committee of Ministers for consideration of the measures to be taken. Well, what could be said about this procedure, except that it is this is not an entirely new approach, but this is a very critical procedure. Because you have a 2/3 majority within the Committee of Ministers, this whole procedure practically is recognized. A given country is a non-binding country to the convention. So the question is to what extent the Committee of Ministers would be ready to implement such procedure. Also, this might be interesting, even if there is no conclusion, because the conclusion is that the court, after finding the violation of Article 46, will refer the case to the Committee of Ministers for consideration of the measures to be taken. What kind of measures? Measures which are out of the international law. International law is not in those measures. So, of course, the ultimate possibility is to expel a member state from the Council of Europe, but it, of course, is a little bit theoretical possibility. But this is an interesting problem. But, of course, everything depends on the question, well, if a member state refuses to abide by a final judgment. So, depending on the question, what is exactly in the final judgment? And this is the second, let's say, part of this story, namely the court's way to address the general problems. The traditional way of how the Strasbourg judgments used to be drafted was just a statement of individual violation and individual case, plus a warning just satisfaction. That was it. Of course, there was an idea that once there is a finding of a violation, it is up to the member states to find the proper way of execution of the judgment and returning, let's say, to a correct situation. But the court usually was not involved in such a problem. Now, there is a visible trend into indicating some suggestions, not in the operative part of the government. So in the law part of the government, what would be the best way to remedy the situation, particularly in the Turkish cases that have been several times, formula, the retrial would be the best remedy if required by the applicants, used it. So the court began to be more, let's say, specific. It indicates what must be done on the domestic level. The next step of this more specific approach are the final judgments. The first one was the case Bregovsky versus Poland of 2004, in which the court not only deals with individual matters, but also indicates that. This is a duty of the state to adopt a general legislative or administrative measure to remedy the situation as a general situation, not as an individual violation. And of course, if such final judgments will be adopted or will continue to be adopted by the court, then as a new procedure under Article 46 I will be much more interested and much more effective than until now. The pilot judgment procedure, the pilot judgment process, has appeared 2 years ago, more or less, until today. We have two full pilot judgments. It means judgments in which the operative part of the judgment, the court indicated the necessity to undertake the legislative or administrative measures, and several, as I call it, query pilot judgments. It means judgments in which nothing has been said in the operative part of the judgment, so nothing has been formulated as a comment to the government. But nevertheless, in the below part of the judgment, there is an elaboration of suggestions, what should be done by the government, and this has been particularly adopted in several Italian cases concerning the procedures. So this is more or less the panorama of what is going on. What general conclusions could be drawn? First of all, this is a dynamic process to reform of the convention system. I don't want to say a never-ending story, but it's a dynamic process. Secondly, the reform is absolutely necessary to prevent the whole system simply from getting choked. Thirdly, this reform must be implemented entirely by the political practice of the Council of Europe and the Member States and the court itself. This would require, in my opinion, at least one additional protocol to the convention. The future, well, all depends, of course, not on the Council of Europe, not on the Court, not on the Member States. If the Member States stop violating the human rights, of course, the Court will be more or less deprived of its raison d'etre. But this is not very probable. Because as we can see, the improvement of legal culture, at least on the first period, results in an increase of the number of applications. Because simply the lawyers from new countries, have learned that it's a very good idea to bring a case to Strasbourg. And that's why, while we had, for example, very few cases from Russia and Ukraine. 5 years ago, we have a lot of cases from Russia and Ukraine now because it is effective to go to Strasbourg, which is very nice for human rights. But of course, which is not very nice for our ability to deal with the problems. So, our vision is interesting, and I hope we have many other discussions about these problems to be able to demonstrate. Thank you very much.